This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders, a tribute to Ray Guy. I'm your host, JT. We'll be joined by the great Hall of Famer coming up here in a few moments. As you know, Ray Guy was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this past August 2nd, 2014. He became the first ever punter to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And on November 20th, he receives his Hall of Fame ring at halftime in front of a sold-out crowd at O.co Coliseum as the Raiders host their division rival, the Kansas City Chiefs. Ray Guy was drafted in the first round of the 1973 draft by owner Al Davis and became the first punter ever to be selected in the first round of the NFL draft. He is a seven-time Pro Bowler, a six-time first-team All-Pro, and a member of the NFL's 75th All-Anniversary Team. And most important to the Raider Nation, he is a three-time Super Bowl champion. Ray Guy joins us. And Ray, first off, congratulations for everything that's gone on this year. A pretty exciting year for you, everything that's gone on behind the scenes. And Thursday night, in front of so many of your Hall of Fame teammates, you get your ring at halftime. What does this mean to you?
Well, it's gonna be great to be out there tomorrow night and see all the fans in the stands, and you know, all the former Raiders and the former Hall of Famers and our teammates and all that. It's gonna be great. I can't wait to be out there.
Hey, Ray, I want to go back to the beginning in your career, and I saw your Hall of Fame speech, which was outstanding. And when you were a kid growing up in Georgia and you were thinking about being a baseball player and a football player, you were a multiple sport athlete who had tremendous success at an early age. Who do you give credit for that? Who put you into that lifestyle where you were going to play sports year round and really have an opportunity to succeed?
I don't know who really put me in that atmosphere or whatever, because none of my family, my dad or anything, was athletic and all that. And I had two older brothers that were very athletic. They played sports just like normal, you know, youngsters growing up, and you're going to get into the teenage years and high school, and you become a part of an organized sport, whether it be football, baseball, in high school and all that. So I'm not really sure, you know, where it really came from, where it stemmed from. All I know is I was having fun and all that. It didn't matter what sport I was playing and all that. Maybe I should have put more emphasis on my grades, you know what I mean? But I have no idea where it came from. I just know I enjoyed it. And I knew, you know, later on, a little bit older in life, that you know, something was there. I'm not really sure what it was. Something was there, some gift I was given. You know, as I said many times, you know, in speeches and talking to youth organizations and all that, you know, everybody's given a gift. All we got to do is determine what it is and how to multiply it and how to make it better, not only for yourself, but everybody involved. So I just took what I had and went with it, and fortunately it worked out the way it did.
Who helped you with the decision to go to the University of Southern Mississippi? Was that an easy decision for you, or a very difficult one at the time?
No, it was pretty much an easy thing. You know, coming up, growing up in a small town like such as Thompson, Georgia, you know, you didn't have a lot of people in the county or the city limits and all that. So, but, you know, I only lived like an hour from the University of Georgia in Athens, and I got letters. I used to go up there all the time on weekends when you had a lot of chance for multiple visitations and all that. And but when I went on the campus of Southern Miss, I knew right then that was going to be my destination right there, to play at Southern and go to school at Southern, because it kind of reminded me of my hometown atmosphere. You might want to say where, you know, I was very comfortable. It's where everybody really could know everybody. You wouldn't become just a number and things. So I wanted to be a part of that. And plus, too, they had the initiative and the vision from that new coach, B.W. Underwood, that they wanted Southern to start growing, not only from a institution as Southern Miss, but also from the athletic programs. and I wanted to be a part of that, and I just felt more relaxed, more at home, at ease. And so it was not a difficult choice. If I had to do it again today, I'd do the same thing.
Well, you morphed into an All-American defensive back, 8 interceptions your senior year. Were you thinking about playing on the next level as a DB in the pros?
Well, that seemed to be the direction I was going to play defense, but it didn't wind up that way. And but, you know, every position on a team is important, regardless of where you play one or multiple positions. It's just all of it's very important. It took me a while, my first few years with the Raiders, to get adjusted to doing one thing and concentrate on one thing. And, you know, when I began to realize, you know, I knew punting and the special team growing up were very important from playing in high school and college. But to have to dedicate more time and more knowledge and vision and looking at what you were doing and how you could expand it, you know, to a higher level, gave me more opportunity to really understand what I was doing and why I was doing it and how I would say master, because we never master anything, we just get good at it. And I just wanted to be an integral part of the Raider organization at any chance that I had to, you know, help them win in different critical situations, and it worked out that way.
Can you take us through that first phone call you ever received, I'm assuming from Al Davis, the Raiders, when you were the first ever punter selected in the first round of the 1973 draft? What was that like?
Well, actually, it came from John Madden. And, the first thing I had to do was come over to my apartment and wake me up, because I was still asleep at that time. But, back then, we didn't have all the Hollywood network production they carry on now, and these drafts and things like that. All we had to do was sit around a phone somewhere and wait on a call with them. And I talked to John for about 2 hours, and you know, of course, he congratulated me and all that, and you know, told me that the Raiders had drafted me number one pick overall. I mean, the 23rd pick, and I was there. I was speechless, really, because I didn't really think about going that high. I mean, in fact, I didn't think about being drafted until about the year before that. Kind of got a little indication about it, because you know how people start talking and they say, hey, man, you know, you could be a number one draft choice in the NFL. Well, I never did even thought of it then, but, you know, and when John called, well, we talked for 2 hours and he was explaining about it, because I had to start going out to mini camps and things of this nature. But funny thing is, when I hung up from talking to John, I wheeled the head coach's chair around, and I looked at our SID director, Ace Cleveland, and I said, Ace, who in the hell are the Raiders? And the thing about it is, because see, back in them days, we didn't get any talent back there, and so I didn't see the Raiders very much, and they hadn't been really merged into the AFL that long, where they come into existence in, what, 1962 or 1960, somewhere in there, so... But anyway, he told me who they were and all this stuff. But I was real nervous about coming out and, you know, joining the Raiders organization and, you know, meeting the veterans, you might say. I didn't really know what to expect, especially from the players' standpoint in general, knowing that, you know, the Oakland Raiders, they draft the punter number one, and I think a lot of them were kind of shocked, so I didn't know what kind of reception I would get when I reported to training camp, but it only took me one day to figure that one out, and what it was, hey, they were just like me. They were just good old boys, like to play football and have a good time, and it was easy after that. So, you know, I don't know. Fate has a way of working out. Destiny has a way of working out, and we just have to bide our time and walk that road, and hopefully we got the right choice when we walked down it. So, you know, if not, then we're going to make a detour somewhere. So I was very fortunate. God bless me.
Ray Guy's our guest. Hey, Ray, when you got in there, you mentioned John Madden. the rivalries were unbelievable between the Dolphins, Pittsburgh, and Kansas City. And you're a rookie. You're thrown right in the middle of that, ending the Miami winning streak in 73, Sia Hands, the Miami home opener in 75, the Pittsburgh AFC title game, and then, you know, getting by the Steelers in the 76 title game. All those rivalry games right when you came into the league. What was that like looking around saying, I'm playing against the best football players in the world?
I never gave it any thought. I meant, to me, I mean, I love playing football, and it really didn't matter who you were playing and what quality of team they were or what their accomplishments have been through the years and all that. All I know is that, you know, we're a football team. We line up against them, and we play, and maybe the best team win, you know. So it really didn't bother me. And, you know, yeah, I knew about the rivals. I got a quick introduction to that in the first of the years, and especially, you know, not only Pittsburgh and Miami and all that, but this whole AFC West was very dominating and very competitive amongst the teams, and especially us. But, you know, it didn't bother me. For some reason or the pressure was like I looked forward to it. And it seemed like the more pressure was put on me, the more I would perform. So it didn't matter to me who we were playing, you know, like there again, as long as I can help my team win in any way I can. So they were some fierce rivals, believe me.
Hey, Ray, what was the pressure like for John Madden when you won the Super Bowl XI, when you had some private time with the coach and the man who called you after the draft and brought you into the organization? Because you obviously realized he was going through some difficult times, not being able to win the big one. What was it like the night that you won the Super Bowl in Pasadena?
It was a relief off his shoulders, I can tell you right up front, and I'm sure the Raiders organization in general, because, you know, every year prior to that, you get right to the doorstep, and you don't get a chance to take that step and cross that threshold, you know, into the winner's circle. So you get kind of frustrated, and you know, of course, you know how people, they're gonna, you know, question things and this and that and the other. But you know, when you get up in that level of playoff games, and especially into the Super Bowl, you're playing a quality team, too, so you can't take them for granted. You still got to go and do your thing and do what got you there, and not change anything, trying to be cute with it or surprising. You just stay with what you do best. And that's what we did. And like I said, with John's case and the Raider organization in general, that was a lot of weight off their shoulders to get past that and finally step across that threshold into the winner's circle. So I was glad to be a part of that. The only thing I didn't like about it was I got my first punt blocked there.
That's a memory that stays with you. We're wrapping it up with Ray Guy. Hey, Ray, I wanted to ask you about your teammates. I mean, I look at the list of the men you played with: Shell, Upshaw, Hendricks, Tatum, Lester Hayes, Howie Long, Stabler, Plunkett. Who are some of your best friends off the field when you got out of practice or a game ended on Sunday where you're able to sit back and have a beer with and spend some time and travel with in the offseason?
All 49 of them. We didn't have a favorite one. All the Raiders back in those days were a united family. They stuck together. I mean, it didn't matter. We practice hard, we play hard, and we party hard. And you didn't mess with the Raiders in general, because you knew that was a big fraternity, a solid fraternity, and you didn't mess with them because you knew what was going to happen if you did. So, but every one of them, you know, like I said, they were pretty much from the same background that I came from, just good old people, good old boys that loved to play the game. You know, I call them grown men in a child's uniform having a great time. And that's where the Raider organization has been. I know time changes, things change, but you got to understand it's still football. I don't care how you look at it. And you got to play it the way it's supposed to be played.
Hey, Ray, when I saw the build-up to your Hall of Fame speech in the weekend in Canton, Ohio, when they ran the special on you, since you were inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, what's changed in your life? How much have you enjoyed being called a real Hall of Famer everywhere you go? What does that mean?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Nothing has changed in my life. I'm still the same old guy that I was way back then. It's just like it's a big, it's kind of like when John won the first Super Bowl. It's a relief off my shoulder. You know, as far as from the standpoint of punters in general, I wanted to see a punter in there, yeah, and I wanted to be the first, but it didn't really matter if I was the first or not. It's just the idea of you leaving out a part of a engine, and it's the engine's not running right because you're missing the part. And we had to fix that engine so it would run smooth, and we finally have. That's why I said in that speech there, you know, now the Hall of Fame has a complete team. So, you know, I was glad to be the first one, and, you know, there was a lot of former punters there. There were 20 of them there. Now we've got a big group up to 50 now that we're kind of what you call united now. And but the deal is spend a couple hours with them and know that they on their own came to Canton to support me was a big, big thrill for me. It kind of gave me another boost. But to know that I'm the first that goes in, and they were talking to me about being a leader, you might want to say, well, I'm very happy to be a leader for them guys and the punters in general in the future. So whatever it takes to get more in there, we're going to do it.
Ray, last question. Once a Raider, always a Raider. What does this organization mean to you currently today, and what do you hope to accomplish with this organization for the remainder of your life?
What this organization means to me is my family. And it's always going to be a family, and the deal is I've got tremendous memories in the past, and I know there are going to be great things on down the road. We just got to be a little patient with it. We can't always ride the high tide all of our life. We're going to have a low tide somewhere. And when you're down there, that's the time to rebuild and restructure and then, you know, start building that frame a little bit stronger as the tide comes back in. So, you know, like you're saying, once a Raider, always a Raider. And I bleed black and gold, and I bleed black and silver. So it doesn't matter. We're going to be all right.
Thanks again to Ray Guy for joining us. Raider Nation, on the next podcast, we'll get you ready for the game and the road trip to St. Louis as the Raiders take on the St. Louis Rams. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Have an outstanding week.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.